The watchhouse door had opened. Captain Quirk emerged, sword in hand. "You two horrible troll, you raise your hand right now, you repeat the troll oath."
"Ah, Captain," said Carrot, "can we have a word?"
"You're in real trouble, Corporal Carrot," snarled Quirk. "Who do you think you are?"
"I will do what I told."
"Don't wanna be in a wham. I will do what I told."
"Just the man on the spot, Captain," said Carrot cheerfully.
"Well, man on the spot, I'm the superior officer here, and you can damn well..."
"Interesting point," said Carrot. He produced his black book. "I'm relieving you of your command."
"Otherwise I get my goohulug head kicked in."
"Otherwise I get my goohulug head kicked in."
"What? Are you mad?"
"No, sir, but I'm choosing to believe that you are. There are regulations laid down for this eventuality."
"Where is your authority?"
Quirk stared at the crowd.
"Ha! I suppose you'll say this armed mob is your authority, eh?"
Carrot looked shocked.
"No. The laws and ordinances of Ankh-Morpork, sir. It's all down here. Can you tell me what evidence you have against the prisoner Coalface?"
"That damn troll! It's a troll!"
"Yes?"
Quirk looked around.
"Look, I don't have to tell you with everyone here."
"As a matter of fact, according to the rules, you do. That's why it's called evidence. It means that which is seen."
"Listen," hissed Quirk, leaning towards Carrot. "He's a troll. He's as guilty as hell of something. They all are."
Carrot smiled brightly. Colon had come to know that smile. Carrot's face seemed to go waxy and glisten when he smiled like that.
"And so you locked him up?"
"Right."
"Oh, I see. I understand now."
Carrot turned away.
"I don't know what you think you're doing,"
Quirk began. People hardly saw Carrot move. There was just a blur, a sound like a stake being thumped on a slab, and the captain was flat on the cobbles. A couple of members of the day watch appeared cautiously in the doorway. Everyone became aware of a rattling noise. Nobby was spinning the Morning Star round and round on the end of its chain, except that because the spiky ball was a very heavy spiky ball, and because the difference between Nobby and a dwarf was species rather than height, it was more a case of both of them orbiting round each other. If he let go, it was an even chance that the target would be hit by a spiky ball or an unexploded Corporal Nobbs. Neither prospect pleased.
"Put it down, Nobby," hissed Colon. "I don't think they're going to make trouble."
"I can't let go, Fred."
Carrot sucked his knuckles. "Do you think that comes under the heading of minimum necessary force, Sergeant?" he asked. He appeared to be genuinely worried.
Fred, what will I do?"
Nobby was a terrified blur. When you're swinging a spiky ball on a chain, the only realistic option is to keep moving. Standing still is an interesting but brief demonstration of a spiral in action.
"Is he still breathing?" said Colon.
"Oh, yes, I pulled the punch."
"Sounds minimum enough to me, sir," said Colon loyally.
"Fred!"
Carrot reached out absent-mindedly as the Morning Star rocketed past and caught it by the chain. Then he threw it against the wall where it stuck. "You men in there in the watchhouse," he said, "come out now." 5 men emerged, edging cautiously around the prone captain. "Good. Now go and get Coalface."
"He's in a bit of a bad temper, Corporal Carrot."
"On account of being chained to the floor," volunteered another guard.
"Well now," said Carrot, "the thing is, he's going to be unchained right now."
The men shuffled their feet nervously, possibly remembering an old proverb that fitted the occasion very well. It runs, "He who chains down a troll, especially taking advantage of the situation to put the boot in a few times, had better not be the one who unchains it again." Carrot nodded.
"I won't ask you to do it, but I might suggest you take some time off," he said.
"Quirm is very nice at this time of year," said Sergeant Colon helpfully. "They've got a floral clock."
Since you mention it, I've got some sick leave coming up," one of them said.
"I should think that's very probable, if you hang around," said Carrot.
They sidled off as fast as decency allowed. The crowd hardly paid them any attention. There was still a lot more mileage in watching Carrot.
"Right," said Carrot. "Detritus, you take some men and go and bring out the prisoner."
"I don't see why..."
a dwarf began.
"You shut up, you horrible man," said Detritus, drunk with power.
You could have heard a guillotine drop. In the crowd, a number of different-sized, knobbly hands gripped a variety of concealed weapons. Everyone looked at Carrot. That was the strange thing, Colon remembered later. Everyone looked at Carrot. Gaspode sniffed a lamppost.
"I see. Three-legged Shep has been ill again," he said. "And old Willie the Pup is back in town."
To a dog, a well-placed hitching post or lamp is a social calendar.
"Where are we?"
said Angua. Foul old Ron's trail was hard to follow. There were so many other smells.
"Somewhere in the sheds," said Gaspode. "Sweetheart Lane smells like..."
He snuffled across the ground.
"Ah, here he is again, the little..."
"Hello, Gaspode."
It was a deep, hoarse voice, a kind of whisper with sand in it. It came from somewhere in an alley.
"How's your friend, Gaspode?"
There was a snigger.
"Ah," said Gaspode. "Hi, guys."
Two dogs emerged from the alley. They were huge. Their species was indeterminate. One of them was jet black and looked like a pit bull terrier crossed with a mincing machine. The other looked like a dog whose name was almost certainly Butch. Both top and bottom set of fangs had grown so large that he appeared to be looking at the world through bars. He was also bow-legged, although it would probably be a bad, if not terminal, move for anyone to comment on this. Gaspode's tail vibrated nervously.
"These are my friends, Black Roger and..."
"Butch," suggested Angua.
"How did you know that?"
"A lucky guess," said Angua. The two big dogs had moved around so that they were on either side of them.
"Well, well, well," said Black Roger. "Who's this, then?"
"Angua," said Gaspode. "She's a..."
"A wolfhound," said Angua. The two dogs paced around them hungrily.
"Big Fido know about her,"
said Black Roger.
"I was just..."
"Well, now," said Black Roger, "I reckon you'd be wanting to come with us. Guild night tonight."
"Sure, sure," said Gaspode. "No problem there."
I could certainly manage either of them, Angua thought, but not both at once. Being a werewolf meant having the dexterity and jaw power to instantly rip out a man's jugular. It was a trick of her father's that had always annoyed her mother, especially when he did it just before meals. But Angua had never been able to bring herself to do it. She'd preferred the vegetarian option.
"Hello,"
said Butch in her ear.
"Don't you worry about anything," moaned Gaspode. "Me and Big Fido, we're like that."
"What are you trying to do? Cross your claws? I didn't know dogs could do that."
"We can't," said Gaspode miserably.
Other dogs slunk out of the shadows as the two of them were half led, half driven along byways that weren't even alleys anymore, just gaps between walls. They opened out eventually into a bare area, nothing more than a large light well for the buildings around it. There was a very large barrel on its side in one corner, with a ragged bit of blanket in it. A variety of dogs were waiting around in front of it, looking expectant. Some of them had only one eye, some of them had only one ear. All of them had scars, and all of them had teeth.
"You," said Black Roger, "wait here." "Don't try to run away," said Butch, "'cause having your intestines chewed out often offends."
Angua lowered her head to Gaspode level. The little dog was shaking.
"What have you got me into?" she growled. "This is the dog guild, right? A pack of strays?"
"Shh, don't say that. These aren't strays." "Oh, blimey,"
Gaspode glanced round.
"You don't just get any hound in the guild. Oh, dear me, no. These are dogs that have been..."
He lowered his voice.
"Bad dogs."
"Bad dogs?"
"Bad dogs. You naughty boy. Give him a smack, you bad dog,"
muttered Gaspode, like some horrible litany.
"Every dog you see here, right? Every dog, run away. Run away from his or her actual owner."
"Is that all?"
"All? All? Well, of course, you ain't exactly a dog. You wouldn't understand. You wouldn't know what it was like, but Big Fido, he told him, 'Throw off your choke chains,' he said. 'Bite the hand that feeds you. Rise up and howl.' He gave him pride,"
said Gaspode, his voice a mixture of fear and fascination.
"He told him, 'Any dog he finds not being a free spirit, that dog is a dead dog.' He killed a Doberman last week just for wagging his tail when a human went past."
Angua looked at some of the other dogs. They were all unkempt. They were also, in a strange way, undog-like. there was a small and rather dainty white poodle that still just about had the overgrown remains of its poodle cut, and a lapdog with the tattered remains of a tartan jacket still hanging from its shoulder. But they weren't milling around or squabbling. They had a uniform, intent look that she'd seen before, although never on dogs. Gaspode was clearly trembling now. Angua slunk over to the poodle. It still had a diamante collar visible under the crusty fur.
"This big Fido," she said, "is he some kind of wolf or what?"
"Spiritually, all dogs are wolves," said the poodle, "but cynically and cruelly severed from their true destiny by the manipulations of so-called humanity."
It sounded like a quote.
"Big Fido said that?"
Angua hazarded. The poodle turned its head. For the first time she saw its eyes. They were red and mad as hell. Anything with eyes like that could kill anything it wanted, because madness, true madness, can drive a fist through a plank.
"Yes," said Big Fido.
He had been a normal dog. He'd begged and rolled over and healed and fetched. Every night he'd been taken for a walk. There was no flash of light when it happened. He'd just been lying in his basket one night, and he'd thought about his name, which was Fido, and the name on the basket, which was Fido, and he thought about his blanket with Fido on it, and his bowl with Fido on it, and above all he brooded on the collar with Fido on it. And something somewhere deep in his brain had gone click, and he'd eaten his blanket, savaged his owner, and dived out through the kitchen window. In the street outside, a Labrador, four times the size of Fido, had sniggered at the collar, and 30 seconds later had fled, whimpering. That had just been the start. The dog hierarchy was a simple matter. Fido had simply asked around, generally in a muffled voice because he had someone's leg in his jaws, until he located the leader of the largest gang of feral dogs in the city. People, that is, dogs, still talked about the fight between Fido and Barking Mad Arthur, a Rottweiler with one eye and a very bad temper. But most animals don't fight to the death, only to the defeat. And Fido was impossible to defeat. He was simply a very small, fast killing streak with a collar. He'd hung on to bits of Barking Mad Arthur until Barking Mad Arthur had given in, and then, to his amazement, Fido had killed him. There was something inexplicably determined about the dog. You could have sandblasted him for 5 minutes, and what was left still wouldn't have given up, and you'd better not turn your back on it. Because Big Fido had a dream.
"Is there a problem?" said Carrot.
"That troll insulted that dwarf," said Strong in the Arm, the dwarf.
"I heard Acting Constable Detritus give an order to Lance Constable Hrolf Pyjama," said Carrot. "What about it?"
"He's a troll."
"Well?"
"He insulted a dwarf."
"Actually, it's a technical military term," said Sergeant Colon.
"That damn troll just happened to save my life today," shouted Cuddy. "What for? What for? What for? 'Cause it was my life, that's what for. I happen to be very attached to it." "I didn't mean... You just shut up, Abba Strong in the Arm. What do you know about anything, you civilian? Why are you so stupid? Ah, I'm too short for this shit."
A shadow loomed in the doorway. Coalface was a basically horizontal shape, a dark mass of fracture lines and sheer surfaces. His eyes gleamed red and suspicious.
"Now you're letting it go," moaned a dwarf.
"This is because we have no reason to keep him locked up," said Carrot. "Whoever killed Mr. Hammerhock was small enough to get through a dwarf's doorway. A troll his size couldn't manage that."
"But everyone knows he's a bad troll," shouted Strong in the Arm.
"I never done nothing," said Coalface.
"You can't turn him loose now, sir," hissed Colon. "They'll set on him."
"I never done nothing."
"Good point, Sergeant. Acting Constable Detritus?"
"Sir."
"Volunteer him."
"I never done nothing."
"You can't do that," shouted the dwarf.
"Ain't gonna be in no watch," growled Coalface.
Carrot leaned towards him. "There's 100 dwarfs over there with great big axes," he whispered. Coalface blinked.
I'll join."
"Swear him in, Acting Constable."
"Permission to enroll another dwarf, sir, to maintain parity."
"Go ahead, Acting Constable Cuddy."
Carrot removed his helmet and wiped his forehead.
"I think that's about it, then," he said.
The crowd stared at him. He smiled brightly.
"No one has to stay here unless they want to," he said.
"I never done nothing."
"Yes, but look," said Strong in the Arm, "if he didn't kill old Hammerhock, who did?"
"I never done nothing."
"Our inquiries are proceeding."
"You don't know."
"But I'm finding out."
"Oh, yes, and when, pray, will you know?"
"Tomorrow." The dwarf hesitated.
"All right, then," he said with extreme reluctance. "Tomorrow. But it had better be tomorrow."
"All right," said Carrot. The crowd dispersed, or at least spread out a bit. Trolls, dwarfs, and humans alike, an Ankh-Morpork citizen is never keen on moving on if there's some street theatre left. Acting Constable Detritus, his chest so swollen with pride and pomposity that his knuckles barely touched the ground, reviewed his troops.
"You listen up, you horrible trolls!"
He paused while the next thoughts shuffled into position.
"You listen up, good right now. You in the watch, boy. It's a job with opportunity," said Detritus. "I only been doing it 10 minutes and already I get promoted. Also got education and training for a good job in Civilian Street. This your club with a nail in it. You will eat it. You will sleep on it. When Detritus say jump, you say, what colour? We gonna do this by the numbers, and I got lots of numbers. I never done nothing."
"You coalface, you smart nap. You got a field marshal's button in your knapsack."
"Never took nothing neither."
"You get down now and give me 32. No, make it 64.
Sergeant Colon pinched the bridge of his nose. "We're alive," he thought. "A troll insulted a dwarf in front of a lot of other dwarfs. Coalface, I mean, Coalface. I mean, Detritus is Mr. Clean by comparison. Is free, and now he's a guard. Carrot laid out mayonnaise. Carrot said we'll sort it all out by tomorrow, and it's dark already. But we're alive. Corporal Carrot is a crazy man.
Hark at them dogs. Everyone's on edge in this heat."
Angua listened to the other dogs howling and thought about wolves. She'd run with the pack a few times and knew about wolves. These dogs weren't wolves. Wolves were peaceful creatures on the whole and fairly simple. Come to think of it, the leader of the pack had been rather like Carrot. Carrot fitted into the city in the same way he'd fitted into the high forests. Dogs were brighter than wolves. Wolves didn't need intelligence, they had other things. But dogs, they'd been given intelligence by humans, whether they wanted it or not. They were certainly more vicious than wolves. They'd got that from humans too. Big Fido was forging his band of strays into what the ignorant thought a wolf pack was, a kind of furry killing machine. She looked around. Big dogs, little dogs, fat dogs, skinny dogs, they were all watching bright-eyed as the poodle talked. About destiny. About discipline. About the natural superiority of the canine race. About wolves. Only Big Fido's vision of wolves weren't wolves as Angua knew them. They were bigger, fiercer, wiser. The wolves of Big Fido's dream. They were kings of the forest, terrors of the night. They had names like Quickfang and Silverback. They were what every dog should aspire to. Big Fido had approved of Angua. She looked very much like a wolf, he said. They all listened, totally entranced, to a small dog who farted nervously while he talked and told them that the natural shape for a dog was a whole lot bigger. Angua would have laughed were it not for the fact that she doubted very much if she'd get out of there alive. And then she watched what happened to a small rat-like mongrel which was dragged into the centre of the circle by a couple of terriers and accused of fetching a stick. Not even wolves did that to other wolves. There was no code of wolf behaviour. There didn't need to be. Wolves didn't need rules about being wolves. When the execution was over, she found Gaspode sitting in a corner and trying to be unobtrusive.
"Will they chase us if we sneak off now?" she said.
"Don't think so. Meeting's over, see?"
"Come on, then."
They sauntered into an alley, and when they were sure they hadn't been noticed, ran like hell.
"Good grief," said Angua when they'd put several streets between them and the crowd of dogs. "He's mad, isn't he?"
"No, mad's when you froth at the mouth," said Gaspode. "He's insane. That's when you froth at the brain."
"All that stuff about wolves.
I suppose a dog's got a right to dream," said Gaspode.
"But wolves aren't like that. They don't even have names."
"Everyone's got a name."
"Wolves haven't. Why should they? They know who they are, and they know who the rest of the pack are. It's all an image, smell and feel and shape.
Wolves don't even have a word for wolves. It's not like that. Names are human things.
Dogs have got names. I've got a name. Gaspode.
My name, said Gaspode, a shade sullenly. Well, I can't explain why, said Angua, but wolves don't have names.
The moon was high now, in a sky as black as a cup of coffee that wasn't very black at all. Its light turned the city into a network of silver lines and shadows. Once upon a time, the Tower of Art had been the centre of the city, but cities tend to migrate gently with time, and Ankh-Morpork's centre was now several hundred yards away. The tower still dominated the city, though. Its black shape reared against the evening sky, contriving to look blacker than mere shadows would suggest. Hardly anyone ever looked at the Tower of Art, because it was always there. It was just a thing. People hardly ever look at familiar things. There was a very faint clink of metal on stone. For a moment, anyone close to the tower and looking in exactly the right place might have fancied that a patch of even blacker darkness was slowly but inexorably moving towards the top. For a moment, the moonlight caught a slim metal tube slung across the figure's back. Then it swung into shadow again as it climbed onwards. The window was resolutely shut.
"But she always leaves it open," Angua whined.
"Must have shut it tonight," said Gaspode. "There's a lot of strange people about."
"But she knows about strange people," said Angua. "Most of them live in her house."
"You'll just have to change back to human and smash the window."
"I can't do that. I'll be naked."
"Well, you're naked now, ain't you?"
"But I'm a wolf. That's different."
"I've never worn anything in my whole life. It's never bothered me."
"The watch house," muttered Angua. "There'll be something at the watch house. Spare chainmail, at least. A sheet or something. And the door doesn't shut properly. Come on."
She trotted off along the street, with Gaspode whimpering along behind her. Someone was singing.
"Blimey," said Gaspode. "Look at that."
Four watchmen slogged past, two dwarfs, two trolls. Angua recognised Detritus.
"Hut, hut, hut! You, without doubt, the horriblest recruits I ever see! Pick up them feet!"
"I never done nothing."
"Now you doing something for the first time in your horrible life, Lance Constable Coalface. It a man life in the watch."
The squad rounded the corner.
"What's been going on?" said Angua.
"Search me. I might know more if one of them stops for a whittle."
There was a small crowd around the watch house in Pseudopolis Yard. They seemed to be watchmen, too. Sergeant Colon was standing under a flickering lamp, scribbling on his clipboard and talking to a small man with a large moustache.
"And your name, mister?"
"Silas Cumberbatch."
"Didn't you used to be the town crier?"
"That's right."
"Right, give him his shilling. Acting Constable Cuddy, one for your squad."
"Who's Acting Constable Cuddy?" said Cumberbatch.
"Down here, mister."
The man looked down.
"But you're a dwarf. I never..."
"Stand to attention when you're talking to a superior officer,"
Cuddy bellowed.
"Ain't no dwarfs or trolls or humans in the watch, see," said Colon. "Just watchmen, see? That's what Corporal Carrot says. Of course, if you'd like to be in Acting Constable Detritus' squad..."
"I like dwarfs," said Cumberbatch hurriedly. "Always have. Not that there are any in the watch, mind," he added after barely a second's thought.
"You learn quick. You'll go a long way in this man's army," said Cuddy. "You could have a field marshal's bottom in your napkin any day now. About ten. Hut, hut, hut."
"Fifth volunteer so far," said Colon to Corporal Nobbs, as Cuddy and his new recruit pounded off into the darkness.
"Even the dean at the university tried to join. Amazing."
Angua looked at Gaspode, who shrugged.
"Detritus is certainly clubbing him into line," said Colon. "After 10 minutes, they're putty in his hands. Mind you," he added, "after 10 minutes, anything's putty in them hands. Reminds me of the drill sergeant we had when I was first in the army." "Tough, was he?"
said Nobby, lighting a cigarette.
"Tough! Tough, blimey! 13 weeks of pure misery, that was. 10-mile run every morning, up to our necks in muck half the time, and him yelling a blue streak and cussing us every living moment. One time he made me stay up all night cleaning the lavies with a toothbrush. He hits us with a spiky stick to get us out of bed. We had to jump through hoops for that man. We hated his damn guts. We'd have stuck one on him if any of us had had the nerve, but of course none of us did. He put us through 3 months of living death. But, you know,
After the passing out parade, us looking at ourselves in all our new uniforms and all, real soldiers at last, seeing what we'd become. Well, we saw him in the bar and, well, I don't mind telling you.
The dogs watched Colon wipe away the suspicion of a tear.
Me and Tonker Jackson and Hoggy Spuds waited for him in the alley and beat seven kinds of hell out of him. It took 3 days for my knuckles to heal.
Colon blew his nose.
Oh, happy days. Fancy a boiled sweet, Nobby? Don't mind if I do, Fred. Give one to the little dog, said Gaspode.
Colon did, and then wondered why.
See,
said Gaspode, crunching it up in his dreadful teeth.
I'm brilliant. Brilliant.
You'd better pray Big Fido doesn't find out, said Angua.
Nah, he won't touch me. I worry him. I've got the power.
He scratched an ear vigorously.
Luke, you don't have to go back in there. We could go and,
No.
Story of my life, said Gaspode. There's Gaspode. Give him a kick.
I thought you had this big happy family to go back to, said Angua, as she pushed open the door.
Eh? Oh, yes. Right,
said Gaspode hurriedly.
Yes, but I like my sort of independence. I could stroll back home like a shot any time I wanted.
Angua bounded up the stairs and clawed open the nearest door. It was Carrot's bedroom. The smell of him, a kind of golden pink colour, filled it from edge to edge. There was a drawing of a dwarf mine carefully pinned to one wall. Another held a large sheet of cheap paper on which had been drawn, in careful pencil line, with many crossings out and smudges, a map of the city. In front of the window, where a conscientious person would put it, to take as much advantage as possible of the available light, so as not to have to waste too many of the city's candles, was a small table. There was some paper on it and a jar of pencils. There was an old chair, too. A piece of paper had been folded up and wedged under a wobbly leg. And that, apart from a clothes chest, was it. It reminded her of Vimes's room. This was a place where someone came to sleep, not to live. Angua wondered if there was ever a time when anyone in the watch was ever really off duty. She couldn't imagine Sergeant Colon in civilian clothes. When you were a watchman all the time, which was a bit of a bargain for the city, since it only paid you to be a watchman for 10 hours of every day.